Hi, it's Chuck from Above the Basement Boston Music and Conversation. As we were sitting at the Thoreau Institute Library in Lincoln, Massachusetts, waiting for Don Henley to arrive, we were having a nice chat with Thoreau scholar Jeffrey Kramer and decided to turn on the mics and have a quick discussion about Thoreau. Jeff is the curator of collections at the Walden Woods Project's Thoreau Institute at Walden Woods Library and is the editor of annotated editions of both Walden and the Maine Woods, as well as the author of several other award-winning books. His essays and other writings have appeared in the Massachusetts Review, the Literary Review, and the Christian Science Monitor, among others. There is a quote on his website at jeffreyskramer.com from Jim Fleming of Wisconsin Public Radio that says, "Jeffrey Kramer lives and breathes Thoreau. He may know more about the bard at Walden Pond than anyone else alive." After seeing that, what could we do but take advantage of this opportunity and pester him with questions? Here you go.
We actually edit everything. It's usually stuff that Chuck says that you'd want to get rid of.
A lot of cursing, a lot of like mispronunciations of, you know, Henry David Thoreau's name.
Yeah.
No, but we're sitting here in this really lovely room in Lincoln, Mass, and it's the newer venue, I guess, for the Thoreau Library.
You already blew it. Your first time you're saying, you already said it wrong.
What school did you go to? No, Chuck went to the Thoreau School, but we just sort of rocked his world, and I was educated by our guest here, Mr. Jeff Kramer, who is a Thoreau scholar and is a curator of this incredible library here in this beautiful setting. So thank you for sitting with us.
My pleasure.
So you were here since the inception here?
A little after the inception. I started in 2000 and we opened in 1998.
Was 98 when the Thoreau Institute was born?
Right. So the Walden Woods Project had already been established and the Walden Woods Project's Thoreau Institute opened in 98. This campus opened up with the research center.
So we were just chatting before about Thoreau,
and it is this is Thoreau. It's not Thoreau.
I can't do it.
It's tough.
You have to practice.
It's like Chuck Clough. Whenever I say Siri, call Chuck, it says calling Chuck Clough, and he's Clough. Anyway, so this is a big year. This is 2017, and
bicentennial of Thoreau's birth. Right.
1817. How was that for math?
That was good.
Genius.
But we were talking before that the first 100 years, really a lot of focus was about Emerson's writings and what he published,
right,
and not as much Thoreau.
Right. Thoreau really wasn't read that much for probably a good century after he died, and it was in the 1960s, starting in the 1950s really, but 1960s when people really started reading Thoreau more carefully.
And that's when sort of Emerson, I guess, took a back seat, right? Because of the writings and the content.
It was probably neck and neck for a while, but at this point in time, very few people read Emerson, and a lot of people read Thoreau now, and it was a complete reverse before.
Do you think part of that is the way each of them wrote? Maybe one of them wrote a little bit more loftily, maybe?
Definitely. Emerson is very inspirational, but a little bit harder for people to connect to, whereas Thoreau, you can sense the man behind the writings. It more as if he's talking to you specifically.
Yeah. And we were talking about the birth of civil rights, freedom, treating thy neighbor like you'd want to treat yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really around the 50s and 60s.
When the civil rights movement in this country, particularly, that's when Thoreau's, particularly his writings about civil disobedience, writings about standing up to your government and making change, that's when those writings really became very pertinent to America.
Well, it's interesting, and one of the things we're going to bring up with Don is that it's a interesting juxtaposition of the bicentennial and the state of the environment in, we always say this, we don't try to get political, but certainly there is a change in the philosophy of government role in conservation, and or at least they're starting to talk about it.
Right.
All these things kind of coming together at once.
Right.
What is the Thoreau Institute? What are you seeing?
Well, there's more interest in Thoreau's writings about the environment, and certainly a lot of Thoreau's writings helped inspire the environmental movement.
Yeah.
And inspire the national park system.
Right, so John Muir,
right,
who talked to Roosevelt, and that's what started the whole
absolutely.
Conservation.
So Thoreau is considered the father of the environmental movement, the American environmental movement, and I think it is because not so much what he says specifically about what we should do for the environment, because that's something that wouldn't have quite made sense to him in his day, but the writings about nature and the writings about the environment in general have inspired all those people who came after. And so you have John Muir, you have Rachel Carson, you have just an amazing amount of people who have worked really hard and written well about why we should be saving our environment and protecting it.
What do you think Thoreau would think about the national parks?
You mean the state of them now?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they all... The inception, I guess, of the national parks was 100 years ago.
So, I mean, Thoreau was always feeling that there should be land set aside for public use, for that should be protected, that shouldn't be used in any way. It should just be there for recreation, education, and things like that. So, although he probably couldn't ever have conceived of the idea of a national park system, I think if you were to see it now and see how much land is being protected and saved for all the people to use, he'd be really happy about that. His concern was that there's so much private land, and so that you couldn't go down the river, you couldn't walk from point A to point B without trespassing. And that's why he kept making a call for parks and areas where people could feel that it was their land shared by everyone and you were not trespassing.
It's a glacier pond, right?
Right.
And because of that, because of the earth history of it, the land around it is never available to be used for farming.
Correct.
And so a lot of the people who were poor people or whoever they may be, they would camp out there. They'd be living
right.
They're marginalized.
Yes.
So they'd be out there because it was unusable land, so therefore it wasn't as valuable.
Yep.
I mean, I grew up here. I grew up in Concord, and I used to go to the dump.
Yeah.
Every Saturday, we'd go there, be mountains of garbage that we just throw it off the side. And for years, it's unbelievable. And I had no idea, I mean, I was a little kid, that this gorgeous pond was right across the street, like literally right across the street.
That's where the dump still is? No.
No. Right now they have solar panels there now.
Right.
And I believe they dump like snow and leaves.
Composting stuff there.
But
it's not being used as for waste anymore.
Transfer station.
Yeah. Right.
Used to be called a dump in Thoreau's day. Right. No, that was pre-dump.
It was called the Concord City Dump.
But it's true how marginal the land, even in our time, had been. the highway cutting through, the trailer park, the waste station, all of that.
Yeah.
That's amazing concept, even in our glimpse of time here.
Yeah.
You know, I saw something, too, that caught my attention about him. Well, it was when he was in his 20s, and they said sort of like a wild phase. I don't know if it was the right terminology, but
It's all relative.
He'd go wild phase.
It's all relative.
He'd come back from downtown.
I think he was walking around without a hat or something.
Yeah. Some crazy nights in Sudbury. He and a friend, I think the last name was Hoar, H-O-A-R, set fire?
They did.
Was it an accident?
It was an accident. I mean, they talk about Thoreau setting fire to the woods, and it makes it sound purposeful.
Right.
No,
right.
They were on the river and decided to stop and have some lunch, and they were going to make a stew. And so they started a fire so they could make their lunch. The conditions were a bit like a drought, and it was very windy. So that spark to start their fire just flew and took off. And because everything was so dry, the fire spread extremely fast.
Wow.
I saw 300 acres were destroyed.
A lot of acreage. A lot of valuable land was burned. A lot of people in Thoreau's lifetime never forgave him. He was called Woods Burner behind his back.
Really? Interesting.
There's a story of a young girl who, and she tells this story when she's in her 80s, but when she was a young girl, the cinders flying through the air burned her Sunday go-to-church dress, and she never forgave Thoreau for this.
It's too bad Twitter wasn't around back then. He could have used it to defend himself.
That's true. I wonder if they told that girl those were first world problems when it burned her dress.
Right.
Wow. I think it begs the question, was there guilt when he moved here for 2 years? It was right after that.
It was a few years after, but there was definitely guilt. And it's interesting because he doesn't talk about it in his journals for almost 6 years. About 6 years after the event, he actually tells the entire story in his journals about how the fire started and what happened and all the things in trying to put it out. And it's a very, very long passage in his journal. It goes on for several pages, and you can feel the guilt that he's been wrestling with this for 6 years, what the community thinks about him, the damage he caused, all of that. Hmm. And you can see that it took him 6 years to come to some kind of understanding about what happened before he could write about it.
Think about what he gave, though. What came out of that.
Right.
If there was any relationship to that guilt, think about how it transcended.
I think he made up for it.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure the farmers who lost their land probably didn't care. To them, they've lost their livelihood or part of their livelihood. They've lost valuable land. And so the fact that Thoreau turned that experience or was able to write Walden maybe partly out of that, they probably didn't care.
Yeah.
No, not at the time.
Yeah, not at the time. We do.
Interesting.
Wow.
My folks live just off, right off the reservation here. So if I walk in and I'm walking, you walk along the river and there's an old foundation with a fireplace sticking up. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
I've always wondered what that was. It's a tiny plot. Mm-hmm. You can see the foundation and you can see the fireplace is still standing.
This is on the river?
Standing. It overlooks the river. Yeah. I've always wondered what the history is of that, but you don't know.
We'll have to Google Earth it. And
you can't see it from Google Earth.
Oh, you've looked?
I actually did look. Yeah.
Well, I assume.
I didn't Google Earth. I just Google mapped it and then went satellite and it wasn't. But, you know, it's under the trees and everything, so you won't be able to see it. But anyways.
Well, thanks for sitting with us.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure.
Jeff, and
I enjoyed it.
We've learned so much about Thoreau and Walden just in the last hour or so.
Jeff, thanks, man.
Thanks.
We appreciate it.